You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 1.
I've made a decision that as a team on Overdrive, we're going to start giving back. I get, and Pooley might not agree.
I'm not sure where this is going.
Dave Poulin in here, by the
way. Thank you.
Good to see you, buddy.
And I might not agree.
I get a lot of messages saying, oh, dog, I got men's league tonight, but the wife's not feeling well. Do I go? I think we need to help people out with kind of like a helpline once a week with different, like a life advice. Because they ask me all the time.
So you're going to be a life coach then?
Once a week. Really? Instead of like Dear Abby, we'll call it Dear Grappler. Once a week, they send in an email or a note to the grappler, and we offer life advice on what the game plan is.
Life coaching.
Do I go to men's league? Do I stay home? Do I go away for the weekend with the fellas to a game? Do I not do it?
I like it.
We're helping people. We're giving back.
Life coaching is a very, very blossomy industry right now.
How do you become a life coach?
Take courses, like going to university.
Yeah, but you know, who's to say that you actually studied? If I'm putting my life in your hands, mm-hmm. I'm going to hire you as a coach.
Yes.
How do I know you're qualified? How do I know I'm going to like you?
You get a fancy degree for your wall, I'm sure, but I think it's more like I've actually visited with a life coach, and I think a life coach more looks at your life now and looks what's ahead versus a therapist who looks back and wants to dig up stuff you want nothing to do with.
Right.
See, for me, it's like when you go to a course and there's a caddy, the first thing I say to the caddy is, what's your handicap? Because if you're a 15 and you're reading my putts, why would I want you reading my putts?
That's right. That's a perfect analogy.
He knows that course perfect.
I don't care. But if you're a slasher, I don't want you telling me anything to do on the golf course.
It's a perfect analogy because your life coach, I don't know what that would cost to purchase someone's expertise, but who's to say this person has perfected life or has any idea?
I think you would want to know that.
Yeah, but I guess it's got to be like a grapevine kind of thing. Like a buddy of mine had a life coach.
Really liked the person.
It really worked out well. I strongly suggest you look into it.
Hey, but what if this life coach goes home and just gets absolutely mangled every night?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, what if he was betting on the Chargers last night? What if he was on your boy Philip Rivers last night?
What if he was the chief financial officer for the Sacramento Kings?
Or this guy was in deep with the Sacramento Kings and was bilking them out of about $13 million, which is a truly
and
remarkable story
$8
online.
$8 million house.
Right. These are all detailed stories that we can't really get into right now, but
we could with our life coach.
We could with our life coach. Are you throwing fives at me?
That's all I got. It's 100.
There's five.
There's a bigger one between there.
Yeah, the 50. Thank you. That's mine that I gave to him yesterday.
Yeah, that 50 had a short stay. A short stay.
Yeah, we should have hung that up on like a hook.
So it visited, it was with him less than 24 hours and back?
Yeah.
He won the Thursday Nighter last week, but was off on Friday. So I paid him yesterday, and then I was on the Chiefs last night.
Nice.
And I turned the TV off when they went into that two-minute drill because I knew the game was over. Phillip Rivers, two-minute drill, down a touchdown.
What is he doing?
I think he's done, is what he's telling us. I think if Phillip Rivers had a life coach, that life coach, if he was gainfully employed and had any credentials and any integrity, would pull him aside and say, you got enough kids, you got enough money, go live in San Diego, stop playing football. You're
done.
Chargers
need to do. He has enough kids to start his own football team,
doesn't
he?
Yes. The Chargers need to do what Baltimore did and what Kansas City did, where it's you've got Mahomes and you've got the kid in Baltimore, and it's like, you know what? Your time is done. Like, we gotta flip this and find somebody else because you've proven that you can pile up stats, but you're never taking us anywhere.
Yeah, they're out of it now. They're 4-7.
It's over.
Yeah, it's probably over. They're not going to make it this year, and it's another season where Phillip Rivers, you know, he threw four picks last night. And that last pick, I have no idea what he was doing there. Like, that was a wheel route. He missed that. He missed his spot by 10 yards. Like, he undershot that throw by 10 yards. And this was not some bomb from the 50-yard line.
And he's got this expression on his face where he comes back to the sideline where it's like, I did everything perfectly. Something just went wrong. It's like, no, dude, you threw four picks.
Maybe the best facial expressions in pro sports is courtesy of Philip Rivers. Eli Manning's been given a lot of love for that over the years.
I'll bet you Philip Rivers has phenomenal expected analytics.
Based on the play, based on... Yeah, maybe.
I bet you he has phenomenal numbers.
Is that a new thing in hockey where they're talking about like expected goals
is a big
thing.
What
the hell's expected goals?
Well, I won three. I have three expected Stanley Cups.
Yeah, me
right.
too.
You should get three expected rings.
Expected Stanley Cups.
Your rings are expected any time now.
You know, analytics goes so many different ways, but the term expected in front of a term
is nuts. I think it's nuts.
It's expected.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
just the word itself.
And how nuanced can you get? Like, how much further can you go into it in terms of any sport? You know, let's say it was football. That was an expected touchdown, but what, the left tackle?
Or the D-back put his hand up in front of the receiver.
Right. Like, that should have been a touchdown. But, yeah, the opposition, they're allowed to play, too, and they made a really nice play.
That just bumped the quarterback a little bit.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that is a stat that is developing in the analytical world in hockey a lot. You know, expected goals and... I don't know where the Leafs stand in terms of the rest of the league. Watching them play every second of every game all year, I have to believe it's been ugly. But the stats may not indicate that. But you talk about a life coach. Like, I think this could be a recurring theme throughout the afternoon. We can apply what a life coach might say to somebody. Like, I don't think Mike Babcock would ever hire one. Babcock has...
They have one.
He's got the mirror. That's what he's got. He's not employing somebody else to tell him anything. I was thinking more about his comments yesterday that I've always bet on Mike Babcock. And at the time, because we listened to it live, he was saying it at like 4 p.m. Eastern time in Vegas. We played it around 4:20. And I said, okay, I'm fine with that. I don't expect anything different. And the more I thought about it, why couldn't he take himself out of that conversation?
He went full third person.
Right. But why not say, listen, it's not about just me. It's about all of us, and we're all going to get out of it. Like, I know the question was about him and his security, but it would have been so easy for him to just recuse himself from it all and just say, listen, guy, it's not about Mike Babcock. I'm not worried about my job.
Collective pronouns.
We're all in it together.
We.
But Jake Muzzin said it best. Winning will take care of these garbage meetings and these dumb players only and whatever. Winning will take care of all of that. But well, Mike Babcock chooses to say, I bet on Mike Babcock, and I always have, and I always will.
He needs to bet on
his
players.
He loves himself. I know, but he loves himself, and he always has. And there's a certain element to do that job where you have to have a little bit of that in you, but he is the king daddy topper of loving himself. Why do you think no other person in the organization, no assistant coaches can speak to the media? Do you know why? Because it's about Mike Babcock. That's why.
Yeah. And
he was coaching Team Canada with Joel Quenneville.
Claude Julien.
And it was
Hitchcock.
No.
And they had a bunch of cups between them, too.
Yeah. But listen, it's worked for him. He's had a lengthy career, highest paid coach in NHL history. I'm not going to pounce on him for, you know, what he does away from the rink or what he does during practice or whatever. But he can bet on Mike Babcock all he wants. And Mike Babcock may bring the heat tonight. Maybe he coaches the greatest game he's ever coached. If the players don't show up and play for him, no one's going to think about it. It's going to be completely irrelevant, which he understands. I mean, he's not a dummy. He gets it. He needs the players to stick up for him. But, you know, you talk about how winning can change everything. Losing and injuries.
They could be under 500. They're under 500 right now.
They are. 9-9-4. It's deceptive, the three-point games and all that. But losing paired together with some injuries changes the perception of everything, especially the lineup. Like, all of a sudden, with them losing five in a row, and a lot of this is injury-driven, but you look at the lineup for tonight, their third and fourth lines are American Hockey League-esque.
That's fine, Brian, except Antoine Bibeau won a game for Colorado the other night.
Right. I'm not saying that you can't win with it. Hey, they have to win with it.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, prior to this, you look at it and say, well, Spez has been in the league for a long time. Nick Pitan's a crafty little player, you know. And all of a sudden now, after five losses, you're like, yeah, I don't know if Spez can play anymore. Well, Pitan was in the minors a week and a half ago.
Been in the minors had
they been healthy. Yeah.
And the thing about injuries, you know, they played a Pittsburgh game the other night without four pretty good players. Colorado's running without Rantanen and Landeskog right now. That's what they're doing. And without their goalie. And they might be back tonight.
Well, speaking of Pitt, they didn't exactly have a healthy lineup the other night either.
Well, Sidney Crosby's a good player.
Yeah, Letang's not bad.
Letang's a good player. Hornquist's a good player. And Bjugstad. There's four
and
of your
Matt
top,
Murray.
There's four guys. And your goalie.
And they just got dummied by Pittsburgh.
Well, yeah. And every team in the league is dealing with it. Montreal, Drouin's out for 2 months. Byron's out for a month.
Yeah, they have some sneaky depth there. It'll be interesting to see what happens with them.
Right.
You know, they get some guys kind of hanging around there. Matthew Pekka was in the minors. He played all last year. That Charles Hudon. You know, they had a little bit of depth. That Paling kid's going to play now.
Yeah, and they've got their organization is pretty highly touted in terms of what they've drafted and what
they've
developed.
Five guys under 21 years old in the lineup.
Right, and that can help them for a spurt. Yeah. I think that's going to hurt them over time.
Yeah.
You know, I think at some point those kids are going to realize, I'm in the NHL here. This isn't so easy. But
kind of like Mikhaev did, really.
Well, that's a perfect example. Yeah. Like Mikhaev is a guy who he started really strong, and now he's just blended in. Mm-hmm. He's just here now.
He's just a guy, right?
He's just a guy. And that's probably what we should have expected. He should probably be on the fourth line playing 8 or 9 minutes, mm-hmm. easing his way into the NHL. But because of injuries.
Such a good start.
And because he had the start that he did, all of a sudden you expect more. But I remember having this conversation a couple of weeks ago and saying that it was more about style than substance at that point for me. You know, I wanted to see the Maple Leafs win a game, but I wanted to see, you know, a 60-minute effort. I wanted to see special teams being potent on both sides. I wanted to see the big boys dominate. Tonight, I don't care how they win.
Well,
I just
think
they have to
Muzzin's
win.
What did you comments about that? Like, he went hard after his own guys.
About, he said basically their effort has been the issue.
They've built their careers on offense. He said they've built their careers on offense so far. They have to learn to play defense.
Kind of sounds like a guy he used to play with in L.A., who, when he said it, people pounced, and that's Drew Doughty. But Muzzin is speaking from a place of wisdom and experience. I mean, he's won a cup before, and now he's comfortable. He's in the room. He knows what these guys are all about. But ideally, you know, it's a 60-minute quality game, but quite frankly, I think when it's been this ugly, they need to feel good about themselves, and they just need to stop the bleeding. They need to win.
Yeah, they need to win.
I don't care if Freddie makes 50 stops tonight. You got to find a way to get a win, and then you just say, okay, we're out of it. Now let's start really chipping away at what we're doing wrong. Ideally, it happens tonight again, but if it doesn't, put it this way. If they lose, but they feel really good about their game, it falls on deaf ears.
No good.
Nobody cares. Marc-Andre Fleury, if he makes 50 stops tonight, you don't just say, hey, we feel like we've really made some progress. You've got to win games. You need points.
You have to win. Now, coming into the year, you knew that some teams had made moves and potentially were going to be better. But, you know, there are 13 games tonight, I think, in the National Hockey League. And there's like 7 of them where teams have to win. Like Calgary has to win. San Jose has to win. Nashville has to win a game. You know, the Leafs aren't alone in this.
There's so many swings. It seems like teams are going on 10-game heaters, and then they're just going on 10-game losing streaks. It's unbelievable.
The good teams right now, the teams that we thought would be good going into the year, yeah.
Well, I saw that Monahan's on the second line tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And Babcock said after the game in Pittsburgh, it's a 4.5-hour flight, and at that point I'm going to have some answers. At this point, it looks like there's been one change. Well, two. Pierre Engvall will make his debut tonight.
He is going to play?
He is going to play. Timoshov is out, so you've got a fourth line adjustment, and Hall is being flipped for Barry.
How is that your only adjustment?
That speaks to Mike Babcock believing what he's doing is the right thing. Mm-hmm. So what he's saying, in my opinion, based on the lineup changes, and they might change 5 minutes into the game, but if that's what you gathered by watching the tape on that four-hour flight, I'm going to flip one guy.
Brian, when they came out at the start of the third period, and I just sit with my phone, right, and I just type things into my phone. When they came out with the exact same lines at the start of the third period against Pittsburgh, I just put same lines and like five question marks. Like, really?
Yeah, like you're on a streak where don't you want to flip Nylander or switch around that top line?
I mean, something.
Anything.
Yeah. Something.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, we've yelled and screamed about this, and I know it's not going to happen, but maybe you load up a line. You know, maybe you go Matthews, Tavares, Nylander tonight, and say you're playing 23, 4 minutes.
And if Matthews wants to play with Nylander, constantly. You simply say you don't get to.
Or maybe you put Hyman back with them.
You don't get to.
How about that? Like, the best that line has ever played was when Zach Hyman was on the wing. Take Janssen off, say you're going down, because you have more offense technically than Hyman, and Tavares could use the help right now. Tavares,
it's been a grind for him since he came back.
It was a grind before he got injured. Like, he has not had a dominant sequence within a game, I don't think, at any point this season.
What he's doing right now is chipping in. He's chipping in, down a goal, 2 minutes left, he chips in a goal.
Right.
There is no dominance or no...
There's no, wow, 91's over the boards, he's feeling it. Mm-hmm. Like,
no, that's not been there all year.
It has not been there. And part of that might be Mitch Marner's not on his wing right now, but he's better than relying on one player. Like, he's a great player. They all should be. But, again, as of now, and the game is still 6 hours away, it feels like they're just going to continue to, you know, preach consistency, which would indicate that Babcock thinks they're going to dig their way out.
Did anybody go out in Vegas?
I hope so. I think so. Would you have a problem with that? On the Sunday, 2 days before the game.
As a coach, I would simply say this. I better not see you anywhere. Wherever you choose to go, better be someplace that I'm not.
Well, I know they were golfing. Some of them were golfing on the Sunday, which I have no problem with. If I had, millions in the bank and 2 days off, I'd play 36, hit the club that night. I wouldn't advertise it to the world. I probably wouldn't jump on Instagram and let everyone know, hey, I'm having a great time down here.
Did somebody do that?
There were some golfing pictures.
There was one particular player that posted something. It's his name. You can figure it out on Instagram. It may not be there anymore. It was William Nylander. We'll just say who it was. It was him and Kapanen and hashtag blessed. He's on the golf course. Again, I don't care that he's playing. Go ahead and play.
Kind of funny, actually.
It is kind of funny. But it's like, why would you post that and let people back home in Toronto where everyone is stewing?
And there was an ice storm when it was posted.
It's freezing cold here. People hate this team right now. And Bill Nylander's down there playing 36 at some
level. That's what I always wonder. It's like, you're a fan of the Leafs.
I love it.
He's down there golfing. If some Bay Street guy has a crap day, is he not allowed to go on Instagram?
Of course he is.
Okay, so what's
he's
the
not
difference?
A public figure. You know the difference between a Bay Street guy and a Maple Leaf.
I mean, the King Daddy Topper is the Leafs didn't make the playoffs, and Phil posted a picture on a fishing boat and said, there's nowhere I'd rather be in the world. And people were like, what about the playoffs?
Right. Which, again, it's being tone deaf. It's not that you shouldn't do it. Let me reiterate. If I was Nylander, I'd play 36, hit the club that night, and I'd be in the high rollers room until
and
about 6 a.m.
post a single
But
thing.
I wouldn't post it because I'd be like, that's probably just going to cause me, people are going to write me and say, hey, why aren't you in the gym right now?
Or, so find
who
a
cares?
Word. It's sort of indifference to the situation, which would be a great word to describe his play sometimes. Like when he makes a play and the body just totally straightens up and there's no push at all, you're like, yeah, he doesn't really want it that bad, that puck. That's fine. When he went in against Chara on Friday night.
Yeah. It's like he purposely
almost
fell
off his chair. Yeah. It was like,
I'm like,
was
he did
that
it on
a
purpose.
Bail?
He fell down so he couldn't go in the corner and get crushed by Chara.
Well, he's not alone in that.
It was a safe play.
Right. That was an expected big hit.
Yeah, the coming out.
He was going to get laid out.
The going out in Vegas, time and place. But boy, as a coach,
well,
or manager,
it makes you wonder what these guys. You know, of course they want to win every night, but their play would indicate that they're leaving a lot to be desired. These guys are not dumb. You guys all did this for a long time. When you get the schedule, you circle, when are we going to California?
What was
when
the
are we
trip?
Going to Florida?
Well, LA was the one trip for
right,
me.
But that was back in the day.
Huge.
But could you imagine not being inspired before you go out there? Could you imagine
well,
thinking...
Well, that's the thing. The results dictate on your mood going into those trips. You're on a five-game heater going out to Vegas. Nobody cares about anything.
People are dying for you to have an Instagram story live.
And that's just the reality of pro sports. It's like... When things aren't going well, everybody's in a bad mood, and it's not fun, and you got to grind it out, and you all got to go through it together. And when you get to Vegas, I mean, it's not like everyone's saying, yeah, let's get to the golf. It's kind of like you're hiding behind stuff. You're not.
Well, how about when you're on the elevator and you're going down, and it stops on a floor you're not sure about, and you're like, don't let this be the coach. Don't let this be the coach.
You've got your clubs, a case of beer.
Your sunglasses on.
Just a lather.
Don't
on.
Let it be the coach. So the one trip for us was LA, right? It was the one warm weather spot. And we were playing on a Monday night in Detroit. They were terrible. And we were going to LA to play Saturday night. And we were down 6-0 to Detroit after the first period. And Keenan came in just stomping, fire coming out of his ear, just absolutely furious. He said, we are not going to L.A. We are going back to Philadelphia. You don't deserve warm weather. It's like January in Detroit. He left. I stood up and said, we're going to L.A., boys. We ripped off 11 straight goals, I think.
No way.
Yeah, we got the goalie pulled twice. It was like Greg Steppen, somebody else.
The double pull.
And I just said, okay, we're going to L.A.
Yeah. That's inspiration.
That made him even madder that we ripped off like 10 or 11 in a row.
Because where was that in the first period?
Yeah.
Who cares? Yeah, Detroit.
It was Detroit.
See, that's what I'm talking about. That should have been the speech in Pittsburgh after the first period. Let's do it for Kaskasuo, but more importantly, let's do it so we can party in Vegas.
Yeah, that's what I expect from William Nylander. You want to go tee it up and have fun and put it on Instagram, blast? Go out there and be the best player on the ice and score three goals.
I'm picturing if he's the head coach and the door's open and Willie's standing on the elevator.
Cleats still on.
The veteran move is once you get out there and you know you're going to get into no good, you just go to a different hotel. That's what you do. Who cares where the team's staying? You go stay somewhere else. Well, go up for the team meal and then go back to bed.
That's right. Vegas has a lot of options.
A ton.
A lot. That's where you get, you don't ever use your own name. You come up with the the fake handle, and you fire off other end of the strip. That's the move. Leafs Gold Knights tonight. You can hear it right here on TSN 1050 and watch it on TSN 4 tonight. So we'll keep teeing that up. The Raptors laid a beating on Charlotte last night. We'll catch up with Josh Lewenberg and his take on the win last night. What Brian Windhorst had to say, connecting Giannis with Masai. We'll tell you about that next. All right, we have a pair of tickets to give away. Leafs Sabres, December 17th. Every day this week, we will provide the clue to the identity of a current or ex-Maple Leaf player. And on Friday, you will have a chance to call in and name that Leaf. Today's clue. This former Maple Leaf had a 10-year NHL career, which included a trip to Vancouver to play for the Canucks. Very, very interesting. Josh Lewenberg, our Raptors reporter, will join us here in a moment. Raptors winning big last night. That Charlotte team is terrible. Terrible.
Michael Jordan would be one of their best players.
I believe he could have stepped on the court last night in a suit and pulled up 15.
They have never even come close.
They might
to
be
a good team.
They might be the most irrelevant team in the Big
Four.
If
you did a top five list, they've got to be up there.
Yeah.
All sports.
The Charlotte Hornets have got to be one of the bottom five teams in terms of relevance in North America.
In an area where you know too well, college basketball just rules. Like, basketball is king in that area.
It is, but Charlotte's a town where the Carolina Panthers are a big deal. Like, they're
yeah.
Oh, it's football country down there too.
Yeah, it's like they should be something better than what they are.
Well, at some point you'd think you'd connect. Like the NBA, it's a weird beast. Like they I guess there aren't enough players who were born and raised there that want to go back. Like you almost need that at some point.
They've had first overall picks. They've had.
I know, and they missed. I mean, ownership's a big part of it. Like Jordan is heavily involved, and clearly he has no idea what he's doing. And the ownership in Charlotte has been a big part of the problem.
But he's a competitive guy. You would think that he would
not put up with
at least give it to someone and say, run it. Give it to Masai and say.
They can't stop themselves, though.
That's the thing. I think his competitive nature actually hurts him. Because you look at a guy like Kemba Walker, who he left and he went to Boston. And I can't blame him. The Celtics are so much better than the Hornets, and it gives them an opportunity to win. But there were a lot of reports going into the offseason that they were not going to give him a max deal. And Kemba Walker, in this era, deserves a max deal. Like, in the eyes of many people around the NBA, and especially when you're a team like Charlotte who has nothing. But I wouldn't be surprised if Jordan looked at him and said, you're not a max player. Like, out of spite. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you're not me. So if you're not me, I'm not going to pay you like a max player.
And maybe that's what it is.
I believe he had the same comments about Steph Curry. He's a great player, not a Hall of Famer yet.
He just said it a month ago.
Yeah, it's like, what the hell are you talking about?
Deadpanned. He's like, no, I'm not joking. Like, the host was laughing. He's like, that's some funny stuff. Like, good material. And Michael's like, laugh all you want. I'm not joking. He's not a Hall of Famer. Which is just so ignorant.
Yeah, it's so stupid. He retires now. He's automatically a Hall of Famer.
Automatically, first ballot, unanimous, into the Hall of Fame.
They might put him right in, like the Gretzky treatment. Like
pretty
going
much
right
done
in.
Everything.
Won titles, revolutionized the game with his play, the face of a dynasty. I mean, there's not much more that Steph can do. But that's Jordan. Here's Josh Lewenberg, our TSN Raptors reporter. How irrelevant is Charlotte, in your opinion, just in the NBA?
Well, they're actually headed in the right direction for the first time. It seems like, well, headed in a, sorry, not right direction, in a direction for the first time in seemingly years. Like, they're almost better off now than they were with Kemba Walker. And with Kemba, they were just stuck in no man's land. They weren't good enough to be good, and they weren't bad enough to be bad. They would be like 10th, 11th seed every year. So at least now they're in the process of restarting the whole thing. But yeah, man, in terms of where they're at in that rebuild process, there probably isn't a team in the NBA that's worse off currently than they are now. Like they don't really even have too many of the building blocks, too many of the pieces that they're going to need to actually take that next step. But I mean, good on them to this point in the season. They're actually winning games and doing better than a number of those other rebuilding teams. I can't imagine it'll last, especially if yesterday is in any indication. But yeah, I mean, they've definitely overachieved to this point.
Well, you look at the Raptors, and I saw someone post this, I think, earlier today. Four teams in the NBA in the top 10 in offensive and defensive efficiency, and the Raptors are one of those four teams, which is what they were for the majority of last season, even the year before. I mean, during the regular season, they've always been efficient. But I think what's become clear is when Kawhi left and when Green left, you know, Nurse has been kind of dropping these hints, and maybe they haven't even been that, you know, inconspicuous. They've been right in our face. He intends on compensating via defense. Like he said it all throughout camp, the new guys are like, these guys aren't playing because they won't defend. He said nothing about, well, they won't show up on the offense. They can't give me a big shot. You know, it was simply if they don't defend, they're not going to play. And I think that makes a lot of sense, and I think it's been evident through 13 games that defensively, Nick Nurse, I mean, he realizes if that's a priority, a lot of other teams are trying to put up 120, 125 a night. He'll try to shut you down, and it's worked so far.
Yeah, that's clearly their identity. And that was probably their identity last year, too, at least in the playoffs, is on the defensive end. But now, realistically, you're looking at this team going into the season. It's like, okay, well, offensively, they're going to take a big step back, and they have. I mean, you mentioned that they're top 10 in offense. Going into last night's game, they were like 15th or 16th or something in offense, which is league average. But then you go out and you beat a team by 30-plus and hit 23s and have 40 assists. I mean, it's so early in the season. The sample size is so small that even a game like that, one game will swing the rankings pretty significantly. But, I mean, offensively, they're pretty much who we thought they would be to this point. No Kawhi, no Danny. They've taken a step back. They still have those nights, like last night, where it's like, okay, well, they're still capable, especially in the way that they're trying to score now. It's not an isolation thing or about one guy or two guys like it has been in the past. I mean, they're really sharing the ball. And even on the nights where the offense is ugly, it's not for a lack of ball movement. It's just they don't have enough guys that can create plays for themselves. So offensively, they're about where we thought they'd be. Defensively, even subtracting, it's pretty incredible considering you subtract two all-world defenders in Kawhi and Danny, but even going to the season, we knew that they had enough talent and versatility on that end that they could still be really good defensively. And I mean, when you look at what they've done against Kawhi and LeBron and Damian Lillard, not just entire teams, but specifically individual superstars, the type of players that we, before every game, spew out those cliches, oh, you're not going to stop them, you can just slow them down. The Raptors are actually stopping these guys. So defensively, they've been really special. And that, to your point, Brian, like they don't have that one guy that they can rely on anymore. So if they're going to win games, yeah, obviously the ball has to move and they've got to hit open threes, but defensively, that's still their opportunity to be an elite team in the NBA. And to this point, they have been on that end.
Josh, I tried to ask Sam last week about Van Fleet and how he's performing and his contract going forward. He seemed to be in the middle of a buffet dinner and didn't really give me an answer. But how do you think things play out with this guy? He's been dynamic. He's been awesome to watch. How do you think the contract stuff plays out?
Oh, it's going to be really interesting because the Raptors love Fred VanVleet. The Raptors want to keep Fred VanVleet. There's no question about it. Whether Lowry is a part of their immediate future or not, luckily they're in an age and an era in the NBA where it's not like quarterback and backup quarterback, and the backup group learns and develops under the quarterback. Now, like point guards, multiple point guards can play together now and do play together. In the case of Van Vliet and Lowry, it had a lot of success playing together. So they want to keep them. Now, the major priority at this point, it's their top priority in every decision they make, whether it's extending Pascal Siakam, giving Lowry his contract, every deal they make, Giannis Antetokounmpo is in the back of their minds. The summer of 2021 and maintaining flexibility there, not only having enough money for one max contract, but maybe having money in addition to that to go out and surround somebody like Giannis with other talent, or at least that's what they would pitch to a player like Giannis. Now, that's where things get really interesting with Van Vliet. I think at one point it was like, all right, well, you can re-sign him and still have a lot of that money left over, because at least at one point it probably seemed like you can get Van Vliet on like a, I don't know, somewhere between $13-16 million deal. And even that seemed like a lot of the time, but the reality is guys get paid now. There's a lot of money out there, and especially this summer, there's going to be teams that have a lot of money, probably bad teams, but still teams that have money, and there aren't that many really good free agents. Van Vliet could be one of maybe the best free agent that's out there, which, again, a few months ago would have seemed crazy, now more realistic. So that's where things could get tough. If Van Vliet continues to have a career season, if Lowry misses more time and Fred establishes himself as a starting point guard caliber player in the league, or even if Lowry comes back and Fred's going to continue to start anyway, if he continues to perform well, all of a sudden we're looking at a contract upwards of $20 million a year, and that's when the Raptors might have to make a decision. I still think they'd want to go out and keep him. He's not restricted. He'll be unrestricted. So, ultimately, they'd still be bidding against other teams if other teams are interested. But I think they'd have to try and find that balance between keeping a player they really like and want to continue to build around, like with Pascal Siakam, but also make sure that they have enough money to go out and really fulfill what ultimately is their end goal here in bringing in a star player, particularly Giannis, in a couple years from now.
With Josh Leuenberger, Raptors reporter, and at this point, I mean, everyone can dream about acquiring Giannis. You know, in Milwaukee, I'm sure they're dreaming about it. In L.A., because that's what they do. I'm sure Knicks fans actually believe they could get in on this. They believe they can get in on everyone, and it never ends up happening. But Brian Windhorst was, I think, on a podcast earlier today, And he connected Giannis with Masai. And he said, quote, if Giannis were to look elsewhere, I think Masai would be a drawing card, which is to be expected. They have a history. But
it's like media tampering, man. Like,
well, I mean, I'll take it because the Raptors
is tampering going on.
The Raptors were on the opposite side of this for 12 months. Uh-huh. And now they might be on the right side of it for the next, you know, 18 months to 20 months. But I wonder if that's where the Knicks connection comes into play here. They should want Masai anyway. They're a train wreck of a team, but they cannot get free agents to sign based on Dolan, based on their history. And if Masai is connected to Giannis the way most people expect that he could be, that might factor into these new reports that seem to resurface every 6 to 8 months.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Knicks, in addition to just, I mean, basically every other team in the NBA, certainly most of them, want Masai Ujiri because Masai Ujiri is a really good executive, first of all. Second of all, I think, and this is so much, this is as much to do with, I think, the value that Masai brings as anything else. He's just a presence. Like, it's not necessarily the tangible making good trades, making good draft picks, but the presence that he has and the respect that he commands, not just individually, but that he brings to the organization and to the team, that's something that anybody should want, and certainly the Knicks being the disaster that they've been over the years. But, yeah, I mean, Masai, for so many years now, since he took over, has been talking about this goal of building this organization and this foundation to the point where they can go out and sell it to the best players in the NBA, and you're not going to get all those guys. You might not get any of those guys. It's very rare that a superstar, not very rare, but it's rare that a superstar player like that hits the open market and is taking meetings and is looking to move to another team. And then even in that situation, they only take so many meetings. They only consider so many teams. So it's tough enough as it is to be in that conversation, but then to go out and actually get the guy, that's really the only thing that this Raptors team under Masai Ujiri hasn't done. They've convinced star players to stay in Lowry and DeRozan. That's something that they had never done pre-Masai. They went out and they acquired a superstar player in Kawhi, which is something. It's not the same thing as recruiting him in free agency, but it's something, and it led to a championship. This is the one thing they haven't done, and that's what going out there and getting Giannis would do. It would obviously be huge, not only for the actual team and their chances of winning a championship and all that, but just in terms of the reputation of the organization. That's a game changer. So, yeah, I mean, keeping Masai is a top priority for the Raptors for so many reasons, because Giannis is also a top priority for them. And I do think, I mean, it's hard to really calculate how much of an advantage it is at this point, but there is an advantage in having Masai Ujiri when it comes specifically to Giannis. There's a relationship there. Masai has a relationship with Giannis, and Masai has a relationship with Giannis's family. I don't know that it's going to come down to that. First of all, we don't even know if Giannis is actually going to be a free agent in 2021. He could still sign an extension. If he is on the open market and he does want to leave Milwaukee, then who knows what could be a factor. We know going home was a factor for Kawhi. Maybe linking up with somebody that he has a pre-existing relationship with and trust with ends up being a factor for Giannis.
Great stuff, buddy. We'll do it again down the road. Thank you.
All right, guys. Talk soon.
Josh Limburger, Raptors reporter. Wanted to get to the finality of his list, the top 25 Raptors of all time. We'll catch up with Josh later in the week. He had Kyle Lowry at 1, Kawhi at 2, DeMar 3, Vince 4, Bosch 5. And I can't really fight that necessarily. That's probably where
you
I
don't think
have
the
it.
Championship puts him at 1?
Kawhi?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think because Lowry was on the team and
a significant contributor.
Significant piece, and he's been here so long and he's staying longer. You know, it's kind of a combination of
the hard one.
Being there and the longevity of it all, representing the team, the heartbeat, all that kind of stuff. But if Kawhi was at 1, I don't think anyone would complain. Although, probably would. Now that I think about it, we complain about everything.
You complain.
You can find someone to complain. Today marks a significant anniversary in pro sports. We'll tell you about that next. All right, Ray Ferraro coming up in about 15 minutes from Vegas. Marcellus Wiley at 5:30. You guys know I enjoy being in here. I like, you know, talking with you guys,
like
doing the show.
With us,
I love doing this show. I feel very fortunate,
you
very
think
lucky.
You'd rather be with Vegas and with Ray right now?
Yeah, I mean, being in Vegas would be pretty cool. We were down there last year for the Leaf game. There'll be a lot of Leaf fans in attendance tonight. Like, there is some danger.
Great place to watch a game.
There is a danger you're going to hear some boos tonight from Leaf fans for their own team if they struggle tonight.
Wow.
Because people will be knee-deep in beers,
but the environment is so great. The walk to the rink right on the strip. I've done a couple games from there.
It's spectacular.
Really fun.
But I kind of want to fast forward this show because something came in the mail today. We're just joking about this. Significant others. My wife orders something online every single day, I think.
Dude, I live in a condo. When you go around the front desk, it's like Santa dropped off.
Every day.
Slay stopped by every day with Amazon boxes.
My wife forgets what she's ordered. Like, the doorbell will ring, and she'll be in shock, and then she'll go, oh, yeah. I ordered that. But she ordered something the other day that I was not aware of. And I don't even really know how to properly describe it. It was like a cord system that connects Super Nintendo to the TV. And we broke out Mario Kart today, Donkey Kong.
Oh, you're going old school.
Old school, Pooley.
Dude, old school Mario Brothers? I've told you, I got that little handheld thing.
This is the real deal,
no,
dude.
No, I know, I've got that
in the
that
man
too.
Cave downstairs.
I've got that too.
And I cannot wait to go home and play video games. I haven't felt like this.
Games to watch tonight. You're going to play video games.
I don't care.
It gets old, though, man. You get down there, you're so horny to play it, and then you play for like 20 minutes.
That's kind of what I anticipate.
You finish the game. You remember back in the 90s where you just used to zip through it and be done, and then you're like...
Well, you can find this on YouTube. Like, Mario Brothers, I think the first one, the world record is like... It's like 6 minutes and 50 seconds or something. The guy goes from level one to beating Bowser. And he just, you got to see this kid.
And you got it on 4K?
No, I don't even think that's a possibility. Like, the console's from the early 90s. The games are in like 92, 93.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think 4K is an option.
So you've got the box with all the games in it.
We got NBA Jam. We got Ken Griffey Jr.
Olympics
is this your Christmas present?
Basically. I don't want anything else. I don't need anything else. I haven't played video games in years.
You're very excited about this.
I'm very excited. The big anniversary I want to get into, because I did tease it, I should mention this. 15 years ago tonight in Detroit, Michigan, the Malice at the Palace. 15 years ago tonight, Ron Artest jumped into the stands after taking a Diet Coke off the head. So we'll touch on that a little bit later. All right? Rays coming up. Marcellus Wiley in the next hour. Overdrive continues on the TSN app.